Thanks for listening to Bootleg Avocado, the culinary and cannabis podcast. My name is Mario Rodriguez. I am your host. And in this episode, we explore hospitality 2.0. We put together a great panel of chefs, including Jen Johnson of A Boring Life and her co-founder, Serafina Panandek. We also have Ron Silver, owner of Bubby's in New York City, and also founder and chief creative officer of Azuka. And last but not least, we have Holden Jagger, co-founder of Altered Plates Hospitality. We're able to cover a lot of different facets of the restaurant industry, highlight the current struggles, and what a post-COVID world actually looks like in hospitality. So thanks for listening. Please be sure to follow us on all our platforms, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and now Twitch. You can also listen to us on any platform that broadcasts podcasts as well. So thanks very much. Please find us at Bootleg Avocado. Well, thank you everyone for being here. This is Bootleg Avocado Presents Hospitality 2.0, our virtual culinary and cannabis event series. So we're excited to kick things off today. We are on YouTube Live, Facebook, Twitch. So we're on different platforms. So very curious to see how that turns out and what sort of viewers we get. So let me start by, let's see here, speaker view. So I wanna make sure that I got all these screens shared properly. So hi, my name is Mara Rodriguez. I'm your host and moderator for today. This is Bootleg Avocado Presents Hospitality 2.0. From my perspective, this kind of hits close to home because on my end, I come from the food world, chef by trade, worked in New York City, New Orleans, and some really good restaurants. And now for me, my focus is on consulting for early stage food startups on the culinary and operations side. So more kind of in the plant-based side, more natural food sector. And for me, I noticed a lot of the collaborations that are happening within the cannabis community kind of jumping into the food world. And that's kind of why we kind of brought together the Bootleg Avocado event series in order to really help with a lot of the coordination collaboration in that sense. So let me just share my screen one more time and tell you a little bit more about what we're trying to do. Okay. So with Bootleg Avocado, what we're trying to do is, hold on, let me see if I can pull this out. There we go. We wanted to launch an event series around people who have really done a lot in the sense of thinking through what culinary is and what the benefits of cannabis is. So our work is grounded on leading collaboration, support, and global innovation in food, beverage, and cannabis. We believe in a culinary-first approach to creating socially responsible and sustainable food concepts. So we launched this first event on February 27th of this year, pre-COVID. And what we wanted to do is really focus on what the state of the union of culinary and cannabis is. We invited four business owners, actually five, because Serafina's here, who have created functional products through taste, performance, and experience. And we wanted to kind of replicate that and think of other segments within the food, beverage, and cannabis world in which could really talk about these integrations. But this time around, we're talking about hospitality, the restaurant world, and how COVID-19 has really impacted the industry. And we're very lucky to have this panelist with us today. So before we kick things off, just a few housekeeping items. One, we're going to be doing a few poll questions, and this is a great opportunity for the audience to participate and provide some data back to our panelists, and also a Q&A session at the end of the discussion, so you guys can actually ask your questions directly to the chefs, and we can go from there. So you can actually start plugging your questions all throughout the event. So first batter up, we have Chef Jen Johnson. And we actually have Serafina Palandek as well, both co-founders. of a Boring Life. So let me share you guys here. Let me pin you. Hey, Jen, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Mario. Nice to be here.
Thanks.
Hi, everybody.
Thanks for being here. Serafina, you're there as well. Thank you for being on the periphery, but you can jump in anytime you want. So Jen, tell me a little bit about Boring Life, as far as the brand, where have you kind of launched, and you know, what has been going on for you the past couple months?
Let's see. So we launched our company around 6 months ago, 6 to 8 months ago, and Serafina and I moved up here from Sonoma County about a year and a half ago, and took a little time to decide kind of what we wanted to do. And CBD definitely was something that interested us. We owned a chicken company before for 5 years, so kind of going from chicken to plant-based was kind of an exciting transition for us. And as a chef, I was really excited to, it's a CBD company, so I was really excited to introduce CBD into food, snacks that just make you feel great and also are nutritious. You want to add anything, Serafina?
Yeah, we just wanted to use Jen's culinary prowess to make a line of CBD products that were better for you. So really more focused on the healthy sector, to address issues of anxiety, sleeplessness, and so forth. But really under the, you know, we see ourselves as a food company that utilizes hemp as a superfood.
Awesome. Thank you, Serafina and Jen. Holden, you are next. Let's go with you. So Holden, tell me a little bit about Alter Plates Hospitality and why you actually got involved with launching a hospitality company.
So my last full-time gig in the restaurant industry was the executive pastry chef at Soho House in West Hollywood. And at that time, I mean, I've been making edibles my entire culinary career. And it just seemed like a natural fit because of sort of some of the positions I found myself in with some of the more high-end members, and could you make this for me? And then I found myself doing dinners, and it just sort of naturally progressed into a business that my sister and I started in 2016. Where we would do private dinners in people's homes. We got incorporated with the state as a medical co-op, and we went through the entire process of doing everything from cultivation on my end, doing pairing dinners, infused meals, and then as the industry developed and as we became a legal state or a recreational state, we moved into a broader event space where we were doing large format events for multiple brands, different activist groups, different business coalitions and things like that, who would hire us to essentially be caterers in a space that still, from a culinary perspective, is one of the more gray areas. There's so much there's so little oversight and you know, poor management of how the state is dealing with something that is, you know, obviously very prevalent. Cannabis events have been going on for a long time. And, you know, we've kind of moved into a role now that we are working with brands, we're working with policymakers, and, you know, trying to expand the message that is cannabis, hemp, as an agricultural product, and as chefs, we are stewards of agriculture. We are, you know, we're the last line between the consumer and the farmer. And I'm just really passionate about making that correlation and sharing the things that I've learned in kitchens and the sharing the pedigree that I have with this plant and, you know, treating it like any other ingredient that you would find in any high-end restaurant.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Holden. And last but not least, we have Chef Ron Silver. He's the owner of Bubby's, founder and chief creative officer of Azuka. Hey, Chef, how you doing?
Good. How are you? Thank you so much for having me today.
Absolutely. I can pull up the slides for you.
That's all right. Or whatever you want to do, that's fine.
You want to do that? Okay, let me just give me 1 second. All right, Ron, you see that?
Yeah.
All right, let it rip.
So I am the creative officer for Azuka, and I'm also the chef and owner of a restaurant in New York City called Bubby's, and I've been running Bubby's for about 30 years. So I've really taken the approach on my understanding of culinary techniques and also this sort of strange ability that I have to sort of dive into subjects that I don't necessarily understand, which in this case was science. And I really was able to apply a deep, deep love for cannabis with science and culinary to come up with a way to approach cannabis molecules to deliver them in an edible and the most effective sort of shelf stable, best, least waste, and best shelf stability and best flavor of sort of any tech, edibles tech that we know of at the moment. So we really have been focused on how to deliver good cannabis edibles technology for CBD and THC, and to do it in a tasty, efficient way.
Great, Ron. Thank you. Anything you want to add, just as far as the time infusion?
Yeah. So basically, our you can see on this slide that we're really focused on fast onset, and so essentially the Azuka time infusion is a way that we can encapsulate a single molecule. So in a nanolipid, which is the technology that most people use, a nanolipid technology is basically the smallest particle is like 20 nanos, but it's more like 800 nanos. Thank you. You can really see here in this slide how, this middle model is kind of how our technology works, which is that if you picture the tennis ball as a cannabis molecule, our time, Azuka time technology sort of encapsulates just like that. And part of the thing is that it has an open end in it, in this encapsulation, which allows for a very stable emulsification. And that's really what we're focused on.
Okay. And then tell us a little bit about the products and also the partnerships that you guys have worked with.
So the product, I mean, the main product that we have is our thyme infusion, and we do have some packaged goods like sugar packets with CBD in them, simple syrup, which makes it very easy to make a dosed drink. And chocolate coins, and we have a few other consumer packaged goods, and we're also helping other people to develop their edible program with our technology inside. So we right now are partnered up with Wana in Colorado, and we help them to develop Wana Quix, which is this fast acting gummy that you see here. And those, you know, those are really selling well, and I think people are particularly happy that they sort of kick in between 5 and 10 minutes.
Great. All right, Ron, thanks very much for that. So let's jump into the, let me make sure I get everyone on screen here. Let's jump into some of the questions that we want to cover here. Let me see here. Okay, I think we're dead. So basically, first question I have, let's kind of get to the basics of things here. So what are the direct effects right now that COVID-19 really did to your business, and how are you guys adjusting to the providing kind of the same level of service, but also making sure you're kind of in line with your mission? Anyone can jump in. I'll start with that one.
Go ahead, John. We opened a cafe, Boring Life Cafe, which I'm actually sitting in now. And about a week and a half later, COVID hit. So we had to pivot pretty quickly. I suffer from an autoimmune disease. I've had cancer. I've got definitely my issues. So we had to, we kind of shut down totally for a couple weeks. We have a daughter also, you know, she had no school, the whole thing. And then just recently, about a week and a half ago, or 2 weeks ago, we ended up just opening up for curbside, and the reception's been great. People call in, we did Grubhub, and I think everyone's adjusting pretty well. So we're looking forward to having more people in the shop, but it's going pretty well.
Okay. What about you, Holden?
Well, the last week of February was the last dinner we did. It was the first pairing dinner that we've done in a long time, pairing cannabis like you would wine with each course as the night progresses is something that we really, I think we've perfected over the years. My sister will do a lot of the flavor presentations. I will come out and I will talk about specific farms, specific techniques. You know, there's the conversation around terroir and how it relates to different genetics in cannabis and sun-grown cannabis in particular. And it was an amazing night. I really loved it. It was for a fantastic client. They were like, "Oh, we're gonna do more of this." And then my birthday was a week later, and I just, you know, aside from a few people here and there reaching out to me to do private infused dinners here and there, which I at this point have declined because I'm teaching my kids. I'm busy doing all these other things that are kind of preoccupying my time. And you know, honestly, lately our business model has shifted away from events and dinners due to a number of factors, but mainly regulation. We've done a lot of consulting in the West Hollywood on-site consumption space, and potential other spaces that are doing on-site consumption. And, you know, those projects are still moving forward in certain ways, but the timeline on them has definitely been extended quite a bit. And watching, you know, some of the pains that my friends and loved ones are going through with, you know, from the restaurant industry, it's a lot to see. I mean, you know, people that are just opening business, my heart goes out to you so much. It's opening a restaurant is one of the hardest things any human being can do. I mean, it is so challenging in so many ways. And, you know, staying open for as long as Bubby's has been around, I mean, it's impressive. And those are amazing things to have accomplished at this point. And, you know, there were enough challenges in our industry at this point to see these, you know, these roadblocks coming up, it's devastating. And also with, you know, Phantom Kitchens and to-go food and all these things that were kind of taking, you know, a hit to the bottom line of a lot of hospitality businesses, you know, it's only kind of buoying those things which were already kind of holding our industry back a little bit. So, you know, lots of big challenges ahead with how this is all going to sort out, but I can only be hopeful that one day I'm going to be standing tableside again, presenting cannabis to a group of people that are impassioned by it in a safe and secure fashion.
Right. Thank you, Hilden. Ron, what about you? Congrats on the longevity, obviously, of Bubby's. So what has shifted the most here, and how are you guys handling it?
So for Bubby's, you know, we've been closed down since maybe March 14th or something like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we lost our sous chef to COVID. So, wow. So, you know, not only were we sort of, I mean, we were a really tight knit group, you know, like my baker has been at Bubby's for 28 years. Yeah. And, you know, and that's, just, I mean, we have lots of people who have been there for 15 years. And so, it, you know, I guess the thing that I'll say is my sort of famous thing at Bubby's is to say that this is not a democracy. And I say that a lot. And in this case, I've very much been saying this is a democracy. And, you know, which is confusing for the kids to just swap from fucking not democracy to democracy, but that's what we're doing. And everybody right now is very excited to sort of get going again. And on Saturday, we're gonna start doing takeout and delivery, although I very much expect that it's not gonna be busy at all, but it'll be good to have a pulse in the restaurant. And I guess the other thing as far as Bubby's goes is that, you know, being in New York City, but it's very much the effect all over the country, you know, the sort of structure, you know, as Holden was just saying, it's hard to run a restaurant, but the people who really do well from restaurants are the landlords. And so it's a good moment to sort of like reel those dudes back in a little bit. And also to really lean into the fact of, you know, who's bringing the value, you know, and how communities are built. So I'm very excited to get back open. I'm excited to see some things adjust in the restaurant world and in real estate in general, although I know it's going to be really difficult. I feel sort of more intimidated by the people having to adjust from, you know, what I would call entitlement in a way. And as far as cannabis goes and Azuka, we've really had a good moment to, basically when the lights went off at the end of February, we had just launched with Wana and we were doing really super with them. And we've continued to do super with them without any advertising. So in the meantime, we've also really been able to talk to some really good partners, and I think when everything sort of lifts up, we're gonna, you know, come out with a lot of very good people to be talking to. So I'm excited about it. And I guess the one last thing I'll say is that I never imagined that I would have 10 weeks sitting in a place by myself to do whatever I want. So it's been very interesting.
Exactly. Thank you, Ron, for the update there. My next question here is basically in regards to basically the other restaurants that are out there. So how can they move forward? What set of rules or shift in culture needs to be put in place in order to really keep on going at this point? Go ahead, Serafina.
Yeah, so one of the things I want to share that I didn't have a chance for in the last question was, Jen, can you mute yours, please? Sorry, it's an echo. Just mute your computer. So one of the things is we have, here in the Pacific Northwest, we have been looking really closely at what is this moment, what's the opportunity of this moment, right? Like, you know, like there, we have all had a bunch of spaciousness at the same time as like being really confused and not sure what's going to happen with most of our businesses, you know, like for our CBD products and our packaged goods products, those have done very well during this time, but we've had to shut down another part of our business. So it's, you know, every day it changes what we expect, what we anticipate. And so for me, what came out of that was like this moment to be like, this whole thing might burn down. So like, if it does, what do I want to create? How do I want to create a business environment that's different? And what's come out of that is we've formed a co-op of farmers and food makers and chefs. We currently have about 75 members, and we're looking at creating a whole new model for making food, sourcing food, and getting food to our end consumer. That's been a really exciting thing that's come out of this for us. as makers and as partners of like trying to see how we can all work together, just like you said, like cooperatively, where you are truly in a democracy and we each have one voice, one vote, right. You know? Anyway, so that's a little brief peek into what some of the shifts that are happening over here. Aborian Life continues to do well in terms of our distribution. And it doesn't apply to restaurants exactly, but I think that it's applicable in terms of, I think that there's new ways for us all to look at how things have traditionally been done for so long, right? Which the systems are created for a reason, but now we have an opportunity to like do things differently, right? And to work together cooperatively and to maybe change things for the better for the folks who are usually the ones that are the least benefited from the food system, which is the farmers.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, there's definitely a lot of opportunities out there. And I think everything's going to be uber local. Everything's going to be more like a co-op as you explained it. And people are going to figure it out. You know, I think we've really relied on a supply chain that really can't survive in this environment. And it shouldn't, you know, like there's enough local farms and local restaurants that people can really spend their time and help to build those and make sure those supply chains are stronger than anything else. Ron or Holden, you want to jump in?
Well, I have a large background in cannabis cultivation. We started our dinner series where I would cultivate each variety of cannabis, and this was more under the auspice of the 215 era where this was actually perfectly legal. And I would, you know, I was your farmer, I was your chef, and I was your sommelier, if you will, or gangier is the word we actually use. And so wearing all those hats, you know, gave me a wonderful perspective. But the second this happened, I find myself, you know, I have the same amount of space that I've have. I have a beautiful garden here at home. And then across the canyon where I live, there's another space where we used to grow a lot of pot. And right now it doesn't have a lot of pot on it, but I've started over 1500 vegetable seeds. Mm. And I'm growing food. I'm gonna feed people because that's what I know how to do. And you know, I've done enough farming to know that's not necessarily something you can hang your hat on. And you know, that's definitely a reason why we need to support our local farmers and our local you know, farmers markets, and you know, tighten those supply chains. All of that is only going to benefit us, and it's going to benefit our children. It's going to lessen our impact on this world. And right now, I don't know if I'm going to be able to sell any of this stuff. I don't know what's going to grow. I don't know what I'm going to be able to do. But come fall, whatever I have is going to go to help people that are hungry. I'm partnering with different food banks and different activists down here that are feeding people and feeding back of the house people and feeding front of the house people who just can't work right now. You know, I live in Los Angeles where everybody comes here to be an actor, but somehow ends up in the hospitality industry. And you know what? They're great at it. But at the end of the day, you know, these people, they need to be secure in what they have. And right now that's just not there. So any way I can help, that's what I'm really looking at right now. And, you know, I'm not promising anything because I've definitely grown food before and it's not easy. But what I hope to get out of this is something that I'm going to be able to turn around and do some good with. So, you know, that's what I think people in the hospitality industry do. We take care of people. You know, it's something inside of us that no matter what situation we're in, we just can't help but find ourselves in.
Well said, Holden. Thank you. What about you, Ron?
Well, I think one thing that I realized is that as a chef, the day you open your restaurant is the day you stop cooking. Because, you know, you can really call grease trap unclogging and, you know, drunken chefs and fryers and things like that. That is not cooking. So what I really have realized is that the last time that I've spent time really, I guess, working on chef skills of cooking was, you know, the summer before I opened Bubby's, which is 1990. Mm-hmm. So this 9 weeks, I was sitting here in my apartment, which is where I am right now. First couple of weeks, I basically ate hash browns every day. That was it. And I was like, dude, you're a chef. I think you can figure out how to cook for yourself. And I literally am talking to myself. And so then I also realized at some point that my sourdough was going to die at Bubby's. It's 130 years old. So I ran over there and grabbed that. And I started feeding that. And somehow I just ended up making bread every day. And I've never made bread in my life. Uh-huh. So I basically started what I was calling it, because if I don't have a job, I don't know what will happen. So I started a company to make one loaf of bread a day and give it away to somebody, which was kind of a challenge to do, like to find somebody to give it to. And I just had never made bread. So now, now we're like, I'm like six, seven weeks into that. And yesterday I just spent $25,000 on a MeWe bread oven, four deck, gets like insane thing. So that's where that went. Mm-hmm. And I think that I really understood that, first of all, as a chef, if I am not cooking and feeding people, I'm kind of dying. I really have to do that. And I didn't really realize that much. I was just like, I got a restaurant, 30 years old. I got 6 restaurants in Japan. That's what, that's as successful as I ever imagined being. But the spiritual part of being a chef has really been the thing, because I'm also a painter and I do all kinds of stuff, and I surrounded myself in my apartment with all my favorite things, and no destructive things, which is wild. I mean, I'm here by myself and all my kids and wife are in Pennsylvania. I could be doing all kinds of crazy stuff up here, but what I'm doing is cooking. So I'm super excited about all of that aspect and just sort of being able to my corner back alive.
Got it. Thank you, Chef. This question actually is for Holden. So you mentioned consumption lounges just before, just a little earlier. So where do you kind of see that going at this point? How are you changing your, I guess, SOPs in order? I know you did some consulting in that end as well.
Well, right now they're all still closed. The thing I'm actually most hopeful about with, honestly, is the ability to maintain the way that we've done this to this point. But I hope this gives the state and other local municipalities some time to sort of figure out their regulatory side. There are some aspects of our laws here in California and locally that, although there are licenses for these businesses, they are not fully compliant under state law. That is getting worked out. And I do appreciate that the state is using this time to sort of remedy some of those hurdles that were preventing these businesses from opening. Because as you know, they handed out 16 of these licenses and only one of them currently has opened. And that is Lowell, and the OG Cannabis Cafe. They had a wonderful rebranding there. Yeah. They currently are not opening their doors, but the communal aspect of the on-site consumption is the appeal of it. I don't think cannabis sales, while we did, have a huge beginning here in California, I think they've sort of leveled off again. But at the same time, that sharing, that passing around, the biggest trend in food right now is shared plates. I think that's a very interesting turn away from, what we're gonna have to turn away from moving forward. Mm-hmm. So I would say at this point, protective sharing devices, things like that, obviously smaller groups, different spacing, all of those things would need to be taken into consideration. But I also think it will allow the state to take a really strong stance about regulating how these businesses operate from a sanitation perspective, because there is no regulation around that. You know, we have ServSafe for, I think nationally now, you have to have some sort of state accreditation to be a food handler. Right. And that just doesn't exist in the same way for this crossover. While, you know, while there is an understanding that there is a similarity between how we do food service and how we do cannabis service, it is a different beast. People are smoking. People are you know, around hot things. There's a few other sort of elements that really need to get worked out on the regulatory side. So I would say that those are some of the things that I look forward to seeing the most change in before these spaces are allowed to really open back up. You know, some real standards and practices that the health inspector is aware of that they can come in and hang their hat on. I know, like, it's kind of crazy for a chef to be screaming for some sort of regulation, some health inspector to come in, but that oversight really, really needs to happen. And honestly, I think that this, that what we're dealing with is a good wake up call for that.
Right. One of the more interesting trends that are happening that I've heard about is social distancing consultants.
Yeah.
So what, have you guys heard of this or looking
into it? How to do it right?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. So they basically set the guidelines for you. They'll come into your restaurant and, you know, put all the tape down and kind of like really outfit your thing. Is that something that you guys would be looking into participating in, or how are you guys handling some of those guidelines yourselves?
I'm not doing that. There's no way. Right. I personally think that it's hard to say how it's going to go, but if people are in a restaurant 6 feet away and there's an air conditioning system blowing germs all over the place, I don't really see the, it doesn't really gel. And so I think a lot of it is optics and sort of, you know, feeding into the idea of sort of quelling people's fears. And I think that it's going to be really important. And Holden, I totally agree with what you're saying about this, you know, regulating these cannabis eateries and, you know, consumption lounges. I think it's going to legitimize those things, but I think that those are two different subjects, really. I mean, what I'm saying is that, you know, having a consultant come in and like lay out tape and tell you how to stay 6 feet apart. I mean, a New York City restaurant is not that big. So I think it's really going to be a workout and trying to figure out the difference between what are the optics of what people want to see or what is really required to make sure this thing gets under control and stays under control. So, you know, we feel really flexible about however we're going to do business and we feel like we're going to be able, I mean, I guess the bottom line is that the Bubby's crew is feeling like we're flexible enough to figure out what we need to do when it comes down to it. But I definitely don't want to start hiring people to tell me what to do.
Got it. Okay, that sounds great, Chef. Jen, what about you? You're on. Hold on. Let me unmute. I got you.
I said, my God, Ron, if I close my eyes, Anthony Bourdain. Holy shit.
We come from the same town.
You're from Jersey too?
No, I'm from Utah.
Oh.
I love it. Jersey. It makes me feel like warm fuzzy. And so do you, Ron, but miss our man, miss our guy. What was the question? Sorry, I was getting lost in the Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah, no worries. As far as the hiring a consultant or a social distancing consultant, how are you going to try and come up with within those guidelines and make sure things are at where it should be?
That's a question for her.
Ah.
Yeah, we're just being really nimble and responsive day by day. Honestly, I don't have a plan because I think that my plan is like safety first, right? Protect my customers, protect myself, protect our staff. That's my first priority. And be kind to others and try and be of service. So how that plays out, I have no idea. But we'll, I do read the news probably too much. So I try and stay on top of like what the recommendations are.
Yeah.
Or even those seem to shift. We won't be hiring somebody to help us, but I don't know what our strategy is right now.
Okay.
Sounds like you have a great strategy to me.
Yeah, figure it out as it comes to you, you know. Ron, this question is for you. You mentioned about the partnership with WANA. From a business perspective, how does a partnership like that work in order to make sure both sides kind of benefit mutually?
So we license our technology to WANA, and I mean, both sides benefit because we bring value in how their edibles function, in how they onset and offset, and WANA brings their amazing expertise at, you know, running the sort of biggest edibles company in the country. So I think, for us, it's a blessing to work with a company like WANA because they're really super honest, good people. Nancy Whiteman is amazing. So it's a blessing for us to work with them. And what they've said to us is that they were looking for 2 years for something that they could use for fast acting edibles, and you know they really have been finding that, you know, working with us is you know, we deliver what we say we're going to deliver, and we also can be helpful in lots of areas, just bringing chef skills to the table.
Got it. Okay. What about you, Jen or Holden? Any sort of partnership that you guys are working on right now, on that sort of scale?
Well, I've spent the last 8 months doing a lot of product development, different, you know, the gummy is the thing I keep getting dragged back to. But we are, we're currently looking at a few things in the CBD space outside of the United States, which okay. I'm very excited about, because seeing these, the interest in markets that 10 years ago, you could have never seen anything remotely close to a hemp or cannabis product sort of delivered into those consumer bases. The international appeal of cannabis is growing, and I'm really happy to move out into new markets and share my expertise with different people. I'm lucky enough to not be in this alone and actually be part of, it's a family business. My sister and I have gotten to travel quite a bit and do really cool things. And the second that we can bring these products into other countries, I'm really looking forward to getting out there and doing it.
Great. Thanks, Holden. What about Jen Serafina?
So we're not working on any new partnerships at this moment. I mean, we're working on that co-op, which I anticipate as being a very large business in the near future. But in the hemp and cannabis space, we are not working on any new partnerships at the moment. Rather unexpectedly during this COVID, since January, we've been selling into China.
Yep.
And that's been very successful for us. It's, you know, we're a very, very new company, and the volume there is significant with a lot of opportunity. That's the China business has been great for us.
Okay, guys. So basically half our audience today comes from the hospitality world, which I think is great. What advice would you give chefs out there who are looking to get into and make a transition into cannabis?
Take food production, because the way the regulations are going to end up, it's not just how they are now, but it's how they're going to end up. They are not going to lean on somebody, you know, I can make a tincture that is one drop, 1 milligram, but unless I get that tested and approved, that is, that's not a cannabis product. And, the second I add that to a dish, I am essentially breaking the law if I serve that to them without testing it again. So the cannabis product space is, for the time being, the safest place to be as a chef. And a strong background in commercial food production will suit you very, very well. And as you try to get some of those nice little consulting gigs or develop your own product. Because while I do believe there is a large space for craft products, when you put anything on the shelf, you have to take, you have to take away certain things that you will pride yourself on as a producer of a craft good. Things from preservatives to different levels of sweeteners and gelling agents and stuff you wouldn't necessarily want to put into your food serving to your guests. So learning those lessons now, or at least having the tool belt to draw from later on, will definitely benefit you greatly.
Great. Thank you, Hilton. Jen, Ron?
Well, I mean, I guess what I would say is that I think there are a lot of unknowns in cannabis, and I think if you're a chef and want to go into the cannabis business, I think it's important to know that first of all, it's not easy, and the rules change constantly, and so. While I agree with Holden that having an understanding of food sciences and food manufacturing is really important, I think the main thing that I would say is that we're seeing the industry go from something along the lines of multi-state operators who are doing every single thing in one organization, and those guys are really not having a very easy time. To us, and I think that what's emerging is super specialization. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like if a young chef or somebody who's in the food and beverage industry wants to go into cannabis, I think it's important to lean into what you really love and what you're really good at. And it also, I think it really helps if you like weed personally. And I find a lot of people in cannabis don't really like weed that much. So I don't really understand that.
Yeah, I gotcha. What about you, Jane?
I would say as a savory chef of 30 years, and all of a sudden we have nuts and honeys and stuff with CBD. All of a sudden I have to measure everything. And it's like, So it's been very... slow. I've been trying to be very methodical, which I'm not, because everything is, every which way. You have to be very careful because you're using a substance. So I know ours is CBD. It's not THC, but still there is the, you have to be careful and cautious and considerate and not fly by the seat of your pants, chef, as I have been for 30 years. So yes.
Great. So let's shift over to the Q&A. So let me actually get things going here, see where we're at. Just want to make sure I saw that. So if you guys have any questions, please drop them in now. We're going to try and cover as many as we can. I just want to let you guys know about our upcoming events. So Bootleg Avocado, our virtual event series, we're looking to really slice up the food, beverage, and cannabis industry and really cover a lot of different topics over the next couple of weeks. We're still looking to round out our panel. So if you or anyone you know would be interested in being one of those panels that cover kind of this sections or these subjects, please reach out to me, mario@bootlegavocado.com. We're also looking for sponsors, so please reach out to me too as well if you want to be a part of this. And like I said, we broadcasted today on Twitch, YouTube, Facebook. We're on LinkedIn, hopefully broadcasting there really soon, and everything else. So let's start off with our Q&A section here. All right, so first question. So what is your direction or dream to make these projects available? Who wants to take that one? Holden, you want to take that one first?
What was the question? I'm sorry.
What is your direction or dream to make these projects available?
I mean, honestly, let's just, you know, I'll take it for what it is. I mean, my dream is to have cannabis grown in California celebrated across the world. I have a unique, well, Oregon as well. But you know, there's this very specific place in this country where we produce the best cannabis that man has ever seen. And celebrating that, like we celebrate all the great winemaking regions, that's my big end. You know, I'll feel like if I've spread that message across the world, then I've done my job. That these farmers that have sacrificed so much to get us to this point, their stories are just as important.
Hey, Holden, you're breaking up a little bit there. Hey, let's go. I think we lost some connection there. Ron, do you want to take that one as well?
Well, tell me the question again.
So basically, what's your direction or dream to make these projects available?
Well, so for Azuka, you know, we're really moving along. So my dream is to be able to add significantly to the conversation of how people can use cannabis in a controlled, understandable way, so they can choose their dose and they know how it's going to work for them. And they know how long it's going to last, and just sort of being able to offer that while developing interesting ways to deliver that. That's our dream, and we're working with lots of really good people now. So that's the direction: just engaging with good people.
Great, thanks, Ron. So next question we have here is: how are you assessing the anticipated demand of your consumer base? Jen, do you want to tackle that one?
There's so much noise here. I didn't even hear you.
I'll give it to you again. How are you assessing the anticipated demand for your customer base?
What does that mean exactly?
I would say, how are you basically trying to meet the increased demand of what your consumers are looking for?
Well, it kind of ebbs and flows. So there's been really no problem with that as far as demand or supply. Okay. So for us, it's been fine.
Just a clarification on that question. How do you know what your customers want?
How do we know?
Yeah.
Well, it's in the markets. So when the markets are calling in and ordering more product, and then I'm assuming then people are enjoying it and want more.
Okay, great. Hey, Holden, you're back, huh?
You guys hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Hear me now.
Okay, right. Holden, the question is, how do you know what your customers want as far as making sure you're kind of meeting the demand?
Well, right now my customers are people I'm directly consulting with, so they're very expressive about whether or not my performance. But you know, I was an expert in cannabis before I became a chef, and I've only expounded upon that expertise in the last few years. So, you know, in any of my dinners, any of the things that I would present tableside, I hope I was doing it right. I mean, I've been relatively successful, But aside from that, you know, I mean, I don't make a direct product, except for the dinners. And, you know, aside from not being able to sell them right now, I know that when we did them, we knocked pretty much every one of them out of the park. I've always been my toughest critic. So right. I would have definitely, you know, I can remember bad services from 2007. So yeah, it would haunt me if I wasn't doing it right.
Uh-huh. What about you, Ron?
Well, I, you know, we get a lot of feedback and, you know, a lot of, so we try to develop things based on that. And a lot of, you know, a lot of what I'm working on is technology, you know, basically how to approach cannabis in a different way. So, you know, for example, one of the things I know is that people really want full entourage edibles. Mm-hmm. You know, with terpenes and cannabinoids and flavonoids. And so I've been really working on that. And I think, you know, I really just try to interpret people's questions into how I can engineer something that will solve the problems for them. So I think that at the moment, what I'm really focused in on is how to deliver edibles with all the cannabinoids, flavonoids, and terpenes in it. Mm-hmm. So that you could basically essentially have strain-specific edibles. And I think that, you know, I really try to knock out the large chunks so that I can create tools for other people. Mm-hmm. And that's really my goal, is just trying to understand what other people need, whether there's people in, you know, making cannabis edibles or people consuming them at home, and just trying to understand that. Because to Holden's point, everybody wants gummy bears. And I think, you know, there's a reason for that, in that it really is medicine. Right. So I think people are just looking for this little thing to, you know, it's not ketchup and it's not spaghetti sauce. You know, it's a thing. I mean, people want to know what they're eating and how long it's going to last. And so I'm really focused on ways to just hone in on that.
Great. Okay. Last question. This is more of a chefy question, and I'm going to moderate it a little bit, modify it. Sorry. What have you guys been cooking lately? Is there any sort of dish or thing that you guys made that's like, wow, that's impressive? That it could be anything. It doesn't have to be fancy, but Ron, you want to start?
Well, I mean, that's a hot topic over here at my house at the moment which is me and my eight personalities. So I feel like in a weird way, I sort of invented a new kind of cuisine, which I'm totally freaking out about, because it's, you know, and what that means, not to sound weird about it. You know, I have restaurants in Japan, so I go there twice a year, and I'm supposed to be there right now. Mm-hmm. And so I was really craving Japanese food, like, I mean, really dying for it, but I don't know how to cook that. So I started reading a bunch of books, and I was reading this book, and I realized that I know the author after I read the book. So I called him, and I've really been diving into this sort of Japanese kind of learning what the ingredients are, because I had no idea I didn't even know what dashi was. I barely knew what ponzu is, and, you know, I just eat stuff and I don't know what it is. Uh-huh. So I figured out what all the tools are, and it's like, oh my god. And now I've been making this sort of, you know, Bubby's food is like pie and fried chicken and pancakes.
Yep.
So I've been making this like Bubby's Japanese food, like fried southern fried chicken katsudon and stuff like that, and clam chowder oyakodons, and just these like really weird like combinations that I never really imagined. I mean, I've mocked people for doing shit like this all the time. I mean, really, I think it's the dumbest thing ever, which it's just ironic and perfect that I would then land on this lily pad that I have to be embarrassed about, but I'm excited about it too.
How high are you when you're creating these menus?
Well, it depends if it's before 7 in the morning or not. But equally high after 7.
We were in Japan a year ago. Blue emoji. It was amazing. Amazing. Yeah. I fucking loved it.
Yeah.
I have been baking, and I was just complaining about baking. I have been baking gluten-free. Run! Yeah, gross. But it's been really good. I know, so gross. But it's actually been really satisfying. Got to watch my health with all of this shit happening and my autoimmune and all this other garbage I have. So been trying to make it taste good and kind of embrace it, even though I'm fighting it tooth and nail. So it's okay. It's okay. And if my 9-year-old is like approves, I'm like, okay, I guess I'm doing a pretty good job.
Yeah, that's the main audience. Sorry,
totally boring, but that's where I'm going with this.
What about you, Holden?
My kids want pancakes every day. And I was decent before, but I think I might be one of the best pancake makers in the world right now. I mean, I am crushing it.
Got it.
But no, honestly, it's been, you know, I went crazy the first month. I was making everything in the world, and now I'm sitting back, and my wife is making some of my favorite meals every night, and I'm just happy.
That's great.
Yeah,
when you have someone to cook for you, especially what you.
She's one of my favorite cooks. She's always made, like, you know. I mean, when we met, I didn't like meatloaf. I was like, why would you? Who could like meatloaf? You know, I didn't want to tell her I'd had like amazing meatloafs that were made at family meals before. Yeah. But like, you know, I'd never been served meatloaf at my house and been like, oh, okay. She made me love meatloaf, man. I mean,
quick last question: yes or no? We'll make it a yes or no. Do you think there's a demand in edibles industry for more savory options?
I think there's a demand for options that don't have sugar in it. And I definitely think that, I mean, really, when you look at it, the number one selling thing is a gummy bear, 100%. Yeah. So anything outside of that is going to be not a gummy bear, I guess. But I see a lot of demand for not sweet things. Sometimes I feel that the three people who want the unsweet things are making the most noise, but that's because I just always look at shit like that. I have a bad attitude.
Right. What about you, Jen?
Our product line I created with Serafina are nuts, walnuts, and almonds from our friend's farm in Sacramento. Really amazing. And how I incorporate CBD is just very simple, delicious. So we wanted to steer away from the sugary stuff as well. And we do a line of honeys, which is natural sugar, which is really exciting. I love working with honey. It's just, you just feel good.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of where we're going with that.
What about you, Holden?
I have tried to work with people that really wanted to do it, and we've ended up on a gummy. The market has got. Am I breaking up again?
No, I think you're okay.
I think I'm going. Okay. Yeah, I mean, there were lots of ice creams.
Yeah, you're falling apart there, Holden.
He's a 5G tower.
That's how COVID started.
Exactly. Holden. I cooked for Woody Harrelson right before, like literally the week before this all went to shit.
Yeah.
It was so cool. He's a big cell, you know, 5G thing, but that guy's so cool.
Yeah.
So cool.
Everyone says the stories are all true with him.
Oh God, yes. Yeah, he's a character, man.
Yeah. Just last remarks while we get Holden back. Ron, just give us your last remarks on just anything you want to leave with the audience on.
Well, I mean, first of all, what I would say is that I am personally so excited to be, it, you know, in the sort of developing cannabis industry. And, you know, obviously there's lots of really good people in it. And I'm super excited to see chefs getting more involved and just the sort of good thinking that's going on out there. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to the sort of culinary side of this conversation developing in a way.
What about you, Jen?
I feel like because of COVID, I feel like people are kind of getting back to their roots, getting back to their family, getting back to the basics.
Yep.
And I'm a big, you know, I worked at Chez Panisse for 10 years. It's all about right out of the earth and right onto your plate, you know, even with the crunchy and the bugs. So, you know, I like where this is going. I'm sad because of the, you know, death, and I'm sorry about your sous chef. Oh, yeah. So sad. But I like where this is going. I think it's a reboot of sorts. And I thank you for your time for let me be part of this.
Well, thanks, Jeff.
I'm not so good at it. I don't really ever do it. My other half does. So
yeah.
Sorry for the awkwardness, but
no, it's okay. It's good to kind of be surrounded by other chefs and be kind of that family that we're all kind of missing, especially if you guys have restaurants and in places yourselves. So thank you very much for being here, being on this panel. Thanks to all the participants as well. Serafina, everyone's second team crews in the background there, coordinating emails and everything. So I appreciate everyone. I love everyone. Please take care of yourselves. Thank you, chefs. Stay well.
Take care. Thank you. Bye. Nice to meet you, Jen.
Nice to meet you.
See you later, Mario.
See you, Thanks. Chef. Thank you.